Because of COVID-19, we were living a nightmare. Our jobs had gone. We couldn't afford the rent.
Every day, because of people's kindness, Threshold is saving 9 families from homelessness. Please support our Christmas appeal. Visit threshold.ie to make an instant gift. Thank you.
Welcome along to another Sunday special with the Tortoise Shack family, where we ease you into your Sunday with some rants, some humour, and a very definite lack of singing, despite what Tony wants and begs us to do every week. Joining us today are Vicky Conway from Police Podcast and Tony and Martin from Echo Chambers Podcast and me, your host, Caroline West from the Glow West Podcast. So this is our weekly highlight where we break down the events of the week. For the Patreons of the podcast, you get a little bit of extra special time with us to have a little Q&A at the end where we really get into the GC details. If you're not currently a Patreon and you want access to this and to support the work of The Shack, please pop along to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We put out about 40 podcasts a month on topics from politics, culture, sex and comedy. So you definitely get bang for your buck. No pun intended, apart from in my case. So it's been a weird week. We're going to start off embarrassing Tony early on. With the trending topics in Ireland on Twitter have been varied, to say the least. So we've had toys, we've had NASA, we've had school uniforms, we've had Sligo, and thanks to Bear Grogan, Tortoise Shack cheerleader, we've had Coolio, and then of course we've also had COVID. So it's been a bit of a weird, disjointed kind of week for a lot of things. I suppose we might start on following up a little bit on one of the topics from last week, which was the image-based sexual abuse cases, which has kind of rolled on a little bit more into this week. And I'm going to come to Vicky on this because it was raised with the guards, and the guards have given us pretty disappointing development in this area. Vicky, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so on Wednesday, we had a meeting of the policing authority, part of which was in public with the commissioner. And so I just took the opportunity to ask the commissioner what update he could provide and reassurance he could provide to victims about how the investigation was progressing. And he made a number of statements that I think others will probably comment on afterwards. He said there were, quite definitively, there were no images of child abuse among the files that were submitted, that there were over 10,000 and they had all been examined, that they'd received no complaints of image-based sexual abuse, coercion or harassment, that no crimes are investigation at this moment in time in Ireland, but still encouraged women to come forward and were anxious to receive any complaints that people may have had. And as I say, he seemed quite definitive. You can watch back on YouTube if you want to see. It's just the last 5 or 10 minutes of the meeting.
And Linda's been quite vocal on Twitter, no surprises there, but just saying, you know, this is obviously ridiculous because one of the files alone has something like 140,000 images. And then Megan Sims, who's also been involved in this case, has been escorting victims to Garda stations, and they're saying, oh, well, you know, there's nothing here. We've deleted the URL or something like that, and so therefore we can't access your files. So it just seems like a mess. It seems like it's not being taken as seriously as it should be. And we know that there are images of children in those files, and we know that there are images of sexual abuse and assault in those files. And it just feels very frustrating to have all that momentum and people talking about this, and then for the guards to go,
The only thing I will say, and Vicky's, the key word you used there was definitive, and he did seem definitive. And, you know, and that's why when RTÉ reported it and the Irish Times reported it, they reported that the Garda Commissioner statement was X, Y, Z, laid it out. And then in the least shocking development, you had people the following day turn up at Garda stations and say, I want to make a complaint because they said there's not been no complaints. And the guard at the front desk has more or less said, look, you know, the matter is closed. We've, you know, the Garda Commissioner has spoken on it, and we've looked at it, and don't worry about it. Go home. There's nothing to worry about. And, you know, I'm not speaking as a straight white man. Like I got, oh, all right. I can understand how the centrist dads are now jumping up and down saying, yes, this is great. This was an overreaction by the Twitterati is one of the most common things I've seen. This nonsense. But a simple fact is there are literally, I can think off the top of my head, of 20 women who've already said, oh, the pictures that I have seen of myself were taken when I was underage. You know, I mean, that's real. That doesn't go away. And I just think whether he was misinformed or just trying to tie a bow in it, it's very disappointing. And I don't think it's going to be as simple as just brushing it away this time. I really don't. They're not dealing with the people who are going to just accept that and walk away.
Well, I also think I have to be a bit careful here, but I will add, I mean, the Victims Alliance have written to the Policing Authority, and, you know, once the Policing Authority has received contradictory evidence that suggests that there's some inaccuracies, perhaps, in what the commissioner said to the authority, we absolutely have to follow that up, and we absolutely will be following it up. And for me, that's one of the really important roles, both of the public meetings and of the existence of the authority, full stop. So it shall not rest here.
And we'll wait to see. I'm sure Linda will be back next week with another update for us anyway on this, because, yeah, it's absolutely not going away. I also want to give a personal shout out to Blind Boy. Thank you very much, Blind Boy, for he mentioned image-based sexual abuse on his podcast, gave me a shout out, made me chart everywhere. I'm currently queen of Algeria. I'm currently number one over there, which is quite random. But it was nice that he said, you know, lads, you need to listen to women who are saying this rather than just when he says it or when men say it. And, you know, there's women screaming from the roof and saying, can we be actually listened to and taken seriously? So that was pretty nice.
And maybe to close on that, to note that so Tuesday is the day that the new legislation is being debated in the Dáil. One of the problems is this whole thing that if you're over 18 and you've shared this and someone else shares it, it seems it's not a crime in Ireland, and that should be remedied this week. So hopefully that all gets passed without much controversy, and that what's in the Justice Committee this week, Burr, has informed us. And they have 25 amendments in. Okay, this is not going to be really straightforward and simple, yeah. But hopefully it's great that people are on it and getting it right.
And on the other side of things, I have 4 workshops lined up on this topic next week across colleges. So it's really nice to see that, like, people are taking steps to build a consent culture from the ground up, and we're not just relying on legislation. We're having cultural changes as well. So that's pretty awesome. We might move on to have a look at homelessness. This is obviously the news that homelessness has increased during a pandemic, which, like, I want to say it's shocking, but given this government, I don't really find that it is very shocking. And there is news this morning that the person who was paralysed when the tent that he was in was
scooped up.
I was just trying to think of the right word there, by a digger or some kind of mechanical equipment, was paralysed, and then he's been burgled twice in his new sheltered accommodation. So, Tony, I know you're like...
Oh, no, it's like I've more... Actually, look, we have Brian McLaughlin from Inner City Helping Homeless on the line. So I suppose, even when eviction bans came in and when these things were happening, the guys were still out on the streets helping people. So, but we have seen actually in the middle of a pandemic, a growth in homelessness, which should not be happening. Brian, how are things?
Afternoon, everyone. How are you?
Good. Listen, you wouldn't mind... I know you guys have been commenting on the fact that we've now over 57 people who have died in homelessness this year, which is, you know, which is an increase again on last year. And now we're seeing that the figure started to creep up. What is your sense on how this is? Has this just fallen off the agenda politically?
I think so, Tony. I think we all are kind of aware of that. I mean, we do remember a time like John Zaccari's name keeps being brought up again because the anniversary was coming up this week. And as we all remember, when Jonathan Curry died, everyone in government had something to say. You know, the Taoiseach had something to say. There was a lot of talk. That continued, as we know, for the first next couple of years. But then suddenly under Owen Murphy's reign, suddenly the deaths in the street didn't warrant to comment. And then as the deaths increased, they talk about it less. So it's like burying the head. It's the ostrich syndrome of let's not acknowledge what's actually going on out there. And, you know, I think we all saw a certain RTE reporter this week as well, do a piece where the numbers don't add up to what we're being told by the DRHE. Now, he claims he got his figure directly from the DRHE. We've looked at 2 reports that the DRHE sent the council, which don't add up. You know, it's pretty clear to me that we're well over the 50 mark. And I think if we were actually getting proper figures across the country, we're a lot higher than that, in our opinion anyway. There seems to be a kind of a narrative of let's talk about Dublin and sometimes ignore everywhere else in the country, but we're regularly in contact with the likes of Katrina Toomey and Cork, and we're hearing about how many deaths they're seeing down there, and a lot of them aren't making the media either. So, you know, the reality is there's a lot more people dying either in emergency accommodation or on the streets than we're being led to believe. And as you said there, Tony, I think the increase is no surprise. We've all called this as soon as the ban on evictions was lifted. This was going to happen. You know, we saw month on month a huge decline in the number of homeless figures from something they told us wasn't constitutional in having an eviction ban. We called out that they shouldn't have lifted it when they did. We knew the COVID was still a risk for the rest of the year, but they still lifted the eviction ban. 13 families became homeless in Dublin in August. So for the first time from the private rental market. So it's clear to us that if this eviction ban had been kept in place until we were in a much better position with COVID, those numbers would have continued to drop over Christmas. But here we are with an additional 59 children that will be in emergency accommodation on Christmas Day.
And it's awful to see vintners weaponizing mental health as a reason to open pubs when the real mental health issues are those who are in deprivation and those who are really suffering. They're the real, I mean, there is nobody who's homeless who doesn't have a trauma or an issue going back. There is nobody homeless. And it really sickens me. It really sickens me to see people weaponize mental health to open up their business. I think absolute shame on you, people. Absolute shame on you.
And one thing, Martin, to think about there as well is you're right in that in mental health does affect everyone that's homeless. But, you know, something that sometimes is forgotten in the narratives we hear from government is a lot of people only develop those mental health issues as a result of being homeless. So they don't have it going into it. But if you have children and you're put into a hotel room for 12 or 18 months, particularly during the middle of a global pandemic, with no services, no access, no place for the kids to go and play, you know, no cooking facilities, you know, that perpetuates that mental health issue. And it's something that our team, Babs, that are doing our mental health supports, you know, Be Aware, Be Safe, they've been inundated this year. And we're so fortunate that we have them there as specifically just to deal on the mental health side, because the demand is huge for it. And, you know, as we come into Christmas with so many people on the PUP payment, and, you know, we know from Social Justice Ireland, there's 680,000 people living under the food poverty line. So the demand for our services and supports over Christmas is going to be huge, and not just from people that are homeless, but we will help anyone that needs it. And unfortunately, it is needed very, very badly this year.
Can I? Here's Brian. I know we're going to lighten it up here with this, but you've just made a thing on the call of how you guys every year do that. You have an appeal running for Christmas. If people can help, how can they help?
Yeah, so Tony, as you know, every year we usually do our big Santa Box appeal where we invite people to pack a box for a homeless adult or child. And it usually culminates with a big end of year event, which was last year was the Phil Christmas truck in Mountjoy Square Park. It's been the Phil Lewis for previous years. So we kind of realised early in the summer that we're not going to have the normal end of year that we would normally have. So we're doing our usual physical appeal. And funnily enough, it's a lot of schools that want to take part, because while most adults are working from home, the kids are all in school, the teachers are all in school. They want to take part in the physical event like they would have done previously. So outside of that, I kind of worked with one of our charity partners called XBO, and we decided to bring it online. So what we have now is a virtual Santa Box appeal as well, where people can go online, they can donate a box for either €15, €25 or €35. They can choose the gender, whether it's an adult or a child. If it's a child, there's 4 different age brackets for them to choose from. And they can enter a personalised message up to 300 characters that our volunteers will actually handwrite into a card and put into the Santa boxes that we put together for these adults and children that are homeless. And it means that people can do it from the safety of their own home, but it's not just giving us money, they can personalise who they want it to go to. So we've ordered ICHH Santa boxes, and our volunteer elves will be putting them together in our warehouse in a socially distanced, you know, safe way of doing it. And you've probably seen online, but our talented partners and friends subset the street artists to the Santa's Grotto mural up in the warehouse. So we're going to try and make it as special for everyone as we possibly can, like we do every year. But we also want to do it in a safer way as possible.
And can I just say on that, I mean, like, I suppose the same thing comes up with the Toy Story appeal, and people have been talking about this. It should not be necessary. We should not need to do this. But the simple reality is that the government is not going to get itself in gear by these Christmas, and these kids deserve that moment and that little bit of Christmas joy that it brings. So it's fantastic that you're doing it, and hopefully people will support while continuing to argue with government about what they should be doing.
Thanks, Vicky. No, you're right there, Vicky. I think we often forget, I think sometimes, and it's something we've discussed on the podcast with the lads before, but you know, if the children that were homeless were actually on the street, the country would be in uproar a lot more than it is. And I think it's the fact that they're out of sight, out of mind in the hotels and the bed and breakfasts and the family hubs, as they like to be called. And I think one thing we need to kind of think about this Christmas is a lot of us have come to appreciate the basics in our life, to have a house or a home, to be able to self-isolate in or quarantine in, to have heating, to have food, very basic needs, but things I think we all appreciate this year more than we ever have. So for us, you know, it was tough on mental health for a lot of people that have all of those things. It was tough for them being at home and not seeing family and not seeing friends and not being in their work environments. You know, some people thrive in a work environment. Some people prefer being at home, but a lot of people prefer the office scenario. So a lot of people have struggled. You multiply that by 10 for children and adults that are in emergency accommodation. So coming up to this Christmas, you know, we hope people have already got behind the appeal. The online appeal is moving fantastically well. So we would ask people, look, do it from the safety of your own home. We'll do all the work. We'll get it there to the people. And if people want to take part, they can go to the website, which is icchsantabox.online. And if they go online there, they can choose who they want it for. And as I say, we'll do our very best, and our volunteers will do our best to make Christmas a special.
Brian, send me the link, and I'll add it to the blurb for this podcast as it goes out, if that's okay. Sorry, Caroline. Thanks for that, Brian.
Just saying thanks a mil to Brian, and always, you know. Excuse me, it's always important to remember that there is a gender dynamic to this as well, because a lot of women fleeing domestic violence services will end up in homeless services as well with their children. Obviously not to say that men experience domestic violence as well, but this is overwhelmingly single parents and children going into homeless services at the moment. So we need to bring that in mind. And speaking of gender, we move on to our next topic, which was the outrage over the school uniforms in Carlow. This was a story that allegedly some of the girls were told that they couldn't wear two figure hugging outfits because they were distracting to the male principals. Now, there's various aspects of this that have been disputed. The principal was on, I think, was it Morning Ireland or Today, one of those morning shows, denying everything took place, but then at the same time admitted that, well, PE isn't meant to be a fashion show. So I'm going to go to the dads here of Tony and Martin, of your thoughts of if your children came home from school and were told that their bodies and were distracting to male teachers, what your responses would be.
Well, I'd be very worried. But it goes down to this: why do we have to tell? As you see, you're picking on the two worst people, because we're both fathers of daughters. So
that's exactly why I'm picking on you.
Yeah. So we would be very much of the case where you must go out and tell your sons to have respect for women, to educate men to have respect for women, to not sexualize their bodies, and insofar as people have, without consent, been involved down the line. And for my children, way much further down the line, maybe in their 40s, when they have boyfriends back then. But nonetheless, yeah, no, I'd be very concerned. And I do have some personal experience of this. And again, it's not for me to talk about that, but I have seen those things where the schools have had to sit down and have conversations around dress codes and, you know, and those situations and how difficult it can be. But again, we're coming at it from the wrong direction if we're talking about it purely in a basis of almost like, you know, well, back to that, she was asking for it nonsense that we've heard for generations. And, you know, that's just not acceptable.
I actually had an experience with my eldest. Now, she's a grown up woman now, but when she was in secondary school, and I had to go down to the school and deal with bullying that she was getting. And I was told that her pictures online, not that she posted, that her mom posted of herself on holidays with her mom, were inappropriate. And this had sort of led to this. And I said, if she walks through your school naked, your job is to protect her. That's your job. That's what you're there for. It's nothing to do with her gender. And this was women telling me this, by the way. This was not men telling me this. This was women. So I read the Riot Act and I said, your job is to protect her. No matter what, your job is to protect her. It's not about what she wears. Your job is to protect her. That's your job. So in the end, I got an apology and I got them to sort it out, because I basically told them if I had to bodyguard her around the school, I would. and that nobody was going to say a word to her, and that if they didn't book up, I'd sue the arse off all of them. So that's how I dealt with it.
That's, I mean, it sounds like the right way to go on it. I just look back at like my school uniform days when I hit senior cycle. We had to wear like this tiny mini skirt, and it was like deeply measured of like, you know, it had to be a certain amount above the knee or not above the knee. And it was like, it was freezing. It wasn't comfortable. Like, you're sitting there under the table with your legs, you know, like if you don't want to expose yourself, your legs have to be squished together for the whole day. Like, it was just... like, it's ridiculous. Like, you just let girls wear trousers for love them. But I'm also really proud of the lads who wore leggings in as protests, and some of them wore skirts as well. I thought I saw, if someone correct me if I'm wrong, that the boys who wore the skirt in got suspended. I hadn't heard that.
Some of this, like, some of the comments here are incredible. Like, guys, I just the engagement from people talking about their own experiences and about some of the, you know, some of the things that happened when... and I see one of the comments is by a school teacher who has been on the podcast previously, but just on, I suppose, overall, it goes back to Caroline, you mentioned 10 minutes ago about going into colleges now to talk about a consent culture. We spoke last week with Philip O'Connor in Stockholm about Sweden's successful locker room talk project. All of this has to be on the agenda. All of this has to be from the grassroots up, and it also needs leadership from the top.
But it also means that if any teacher has indicated that they're getting distracted by a girl and how she's dressed, there needs to be an investigation into the suitability of that person for the teaching profession.
Because they're clearly not suitable.
Can I just add, I know it's slightly different, but it's the same spectrum. If you think you can have a pop at Gino Kelly for what he wears in the Doyle, you are enabling this crap. As long as people have two hands, one mouth, they can decide what to wear themselves. And mind your own fucking business. Simple as.
Yeah.
Taryn DeVere has pointed out that the boys were suspended for wearing skirts in the comments. Okay. So, But yeah, it's not, and Martin is right on the Gino Kennedy, but there's also a class issue at play there, Martin, as well. So
but just mind your own fucking business. It's that simple.
But there's a lot of comments coming in there about, you know, girls with larger busts and their V-neck t-shirts were inappropriate. And I think I saw from Taryn retweeting it that one of the girls was told that her burgeoning breasts, there was some kind of quote around that, maturing breasts, we're part of this conversation. And it's like, can girls just not go through puberty in peace? Like, it's a difficult enough process, like, as we're trying to figure everything out. And, you know, the size of our chest shouldn't really be a topic of public conversation. It shouldn't be a topic of conversation for your teachers.
Could you imagine somebody talking about the development of your breasts that way?
Yeah, it's creepy. It's weird.
It's
just not okay.
They're children.
And generally from men who are developing moobs in their late 40s, you know, that's what makes it so fucking irresponsible.
The cycle comes around.
Yeah.
Okay, we might move on. We might leave that there.
We might come back to some of it in the Q&A, because there's some fantastic points
there. Absolutely a lot to kind of go on. Vicky, I'm going to go to you with the judicial appointments. Are you the thorn in Seamus Wolfe's side, or what's going on there with the judiciary?
No, but I think it was really, I mean, if we stand back, what Helen McEntee said this week is so revealing. Like, she was asked very clearly. I mean, I think Tony might want to comment on the fact that Leo expressed a view. But if you take even the basic point that when it comes to the appointment of a Supreme Court judge, like one of the highest legal positions in the country with massive consequences, as we've talked about before, and the Minister for Justice has said there are no criteria, she exercises her personal judgment. That's insane. Like, there has to be criteria. There should be very detailed, set, important criteria for such an important role. I just think it's crazy. And I think, I mean, whatever about what Leo said, I think we also need to start questioning what civil servants were saying and what role they played in this. But the idea that there are no set criteria for the selection of a Supreme Court judge is shocking.
Considering that's such a position of power.
Mark Tighe has a story today in the Sunday Times about another judge that was appointed and who had no judicial experience and hadn't sat as a judge before, another Anna Fine Gael candidate. Now, that's not to say if the government of the time was a Fianna Fáil government, it would have been any different. If it was a Sinn Féin government, it would have been any different. Do they use the opportunity to just, you know, do things in their favour? Probably yes is the answer to that.
And the lack of judicial experience is not a problem in itself. It can be really good to get somebody who isn't ingrained in that culture to come in. I mean, I pointed this before, like Lady Hale in the UK Supreme Court was appointed straight from academia, and that's deemed a really positive thing. It brings a different brand of thinking, but it has to be done in line with a clear, transparent process that has set criteria and, you know, that we can have confidence in. So it's just crazy.
And also, you've got to remember that the Minister of Justice, Helen McEntee, was only there kind of a wet day. You know, her judgment as Minister for Judgment or for Justice has to be called into question simply because she had such a short piece of tenure.
I think that's unfair, Martin.
I think that's really unfair.
Yeah. I genuinely like. Here's the thing. And we had this conversation. Now, we had this conversation. Let me just recall it back to you. If your boss, in effect, asks you to do something that's deemed reasonable, what's in your job description?
Follow what your boss says. Yeah.
If it's a reasonable request, so therefore she actually followed to the letter what was asked of her. That's all she did, and she was just a bulwark in front of the decision making process, albeit heavily leaned upon by, you know, clearly Leo Varadkar has admitted he leaned upon it by expressing an opinion, and then the process is the process. But nonetheless, something has to give. It has to be changed. I mean, we're seeing the results of it. People keep saying that it wouldn't happen here, and, you know, luckily these guys are benign. We saw the first couple of votes in the US this week of Amy Coney Barrett, who killed a man. You know, she's killed a man, and then with another one she sided with religious freedoms above human rights. So it's we're going into dangerous water if we believe it can't happen here. You know, everybody says Seamus Wolfe was a good guy, and there's loads of real positive testimonies of people who have individual first-hand experience of the man, but that doesn't mean that this is always benign or it's going to be simple. So sorry, Vicky, go.
And I might actually point to, I mean, people might be interested. I was involved in a research project called the Feminist Judgments Project, which is where we pretended, for instance, that we were judges, and how, if you took a case, how it could have been decided in a different way if people from a different mindset were involved. And like, we have huge judgments on citizenship, on schools, on the X case, on I did the Kerry Babies case. Like, this stuff has had consequences already in Ireland. Like, a lot of the most important jurisprudence has come from courts that have been appointed in this way. So, you know, it has shaped our society already.
Does that mean that we're all generally in agreement with Shane Ross, whether we want to be or not?
Sadly, yes.
No, Martin. Don't bring down the tone. we're not accepting that today. I'm gonna move on that point then, and again then to another big inquiry that's happening this week, which is the Pat Finucane inquiry. So, who wants to pick up on that? That's going to be a very interesting and divisive. And
well, we don't know what's happening yet. So basically, where we are with this is that, I mean, the Finucane family have been fighting for a public inquiry since 1989, since Pat Finucane was killed, and what happened was, in February of last year, the UK Supreme Court ruled that what had happened so far did not meet the human rights standards for an Article 2 effective investigation. And we've been waiting 18 months for the UK government to decide how they're going to respond to the UK Supreme Court. And that decision is required by the 30th of November. So tomorrow we will know whether or not there is going to be the public inquiry that the family have been fighting for, because they believe there is collusion at the highest levels, at government levels, that government was involved in the killing of a lawyer in Northern Ireland. So this is going to be, in terms of, you know, and we've talked before about dealing with legacy issues and, you know, remedying the past and so on, this is such an important case. So tomorrow is a really big day in that case.
And can I just say the phraseology that the they've used, that they know who pulled the trigger, and now they want to know who pulled the strings. I think that's very, very strong. And I'd also just a brief mention to Trevor and Barry, who got a settlement this week. I think brilliant. Well done, Trevor and Barry. Long battle. Just wanted to mark that and say well done to the two of you. Really well done.
Yeah, we're just going to plug that with all the hassle, I don't know if you saw it this week, more threats to journalists up north. Very little said about it, actually, in the Irish papers. I know Aoife Moore was talking about it, and naturally enough. But again, at the same time, when they came through the door of Trevor and Barry's homes and seized the kids' iPads and stuff like that, it was quite quiet as well. You know, journalism matters all over this island of Ireland, and not just that. So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Caroline, apologies.
Yeah, no, you're grand. It's just going to be an interesting few months with Northern Ireland. I'd say the Brits are going to be sick of hearing about it with Brexit coming up as well. So it's going to be a very interesting couple of months when it comes around to that. So we might move on quickly there. So some breaking news this morning, was it? And this is the treatment of staff in, is it the Oireachtas or government buildings? We're going to have Bear Grogan to chat about this and about the poverty wages, I suppose, that these staff are being paid. I'll get Bear.
Bear is there, but I just want to put this in context. The story has come out that the parties had a vote. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael basically colluded on the vote to ensure that there was more money put aside for more assistance, in effect. And other parties benefited from it as well. But it's important to point out that the Green Party, Labour, Sinn Féin, the Green, they objected to it, but the numbers were such that they were able to do it. And this is in the context of there are parliamentary assistants and secretarial assistants who are paid less than a living wage. So, Bear, how are you?
I'm good. Sorry, I wasn't really expecting this, so I'll try and be careful about what I'm saying. And obviously, I'm just speaking for myself and my experience in there. But I've been involved in the union in there for the last 4 or 5 years anyway, when different issues were coming up. I know you've all seen the other stories that we've had around the dignity and respect stuff and bullying and harassment. And, you know, I think people think we're all related to them. And, you know, that the politicians appear with their speeches in the Dáil Chamber or in the Shannon Chamber. And I don't know what they think we'd be doing, but, you know, we're sitting there researching and writing and
researching Coolio lyrics.
You have to take these moments when you get them, Vicky. Wait and you see what's coming next. But parliamentary assistance, our scale is actually it's quite good. We start at, I think it's 40 something, and then you move up each year. But secretarial assistants start off at less than the living wage, on like 22-23 grand. You're obviously based in Dublin a lot of the time, so you're paying Dublin rents, and you're like, it's a mad place to work. It's not a 9-to-5 job, do you know what I mean? And even with press media stuff, like, you need to be knowing what's going on. And the amount of work, I would think secretarial assistants are more like constituency managers, usually. You know, they're the ones looking after the face of constituency queries and all of that kind of stuff. And then usually the parliamentary assistants are the ones doing the research and speeches and policy and stuff. But the Shannad SAs, secretarial assistants, are doing parliamentary assistant work, but for half the money, because they're supposed to be only part-time, but they're not. Like, if you're writing legislation and amendments in the Dáil and the Shannad, it is tough work, and it's full-time work. And we're there because we love it and we want to make a difference. But also, like, people should be getting paid a proper wage. And the big thing this year is, like, we've had a pay claim in for a couple of years now, and also, you know, did surveys around people's job descriptions, and it was found that secretarial assistants in the Shannad are actually doing the legislative work of parliamentary assistants. And it's secretarial assistants, Haughey brought them in, you know, where it was like the women on the typewriters, you know, years ago, and that's typing up the letters that were dictated to them. That's not what it is now. We are such an integral part of politics, as are all of the ushers and everyone else who the parliamentary reporters, everyone who keeps everything going. And it's just really shocking that instead of looking at the bigger picture of the wages and the conditions across the whole Oireachtas, that the bigger parties have taken extra resources for themselves. And I think that's been a bit of a feature in this Dáil. The last Dáil, because the government didn't have a major majority, the business committee worked better. There was the committee on Dáil reform. Whereas this year, this time, it seems to be Fianna Fáil, you know, putting their foot down, trying to, you know, relive like the good old days. But that means as well that their secretarial assistants and their low paid staff are suffering as well. You know, it's not about Fianna Fáil SAs get paid more than other SAs. It's the lower paid staff doing the Trojan work, taking the abusive phone calls, maybe taking the abusive shite off the TDs and senators. And not that if you're getting paid more, you should have to put up with that. But yeah, it's just really, really disappointing. Really disappointing. Because we're not all related to them.
Can I just point out that even though the wages are low for those staff, and I mean they are low, they're not the worst employment conditions in Leinster House. There are people in Leinster House fighting to be recognised as employees in the lowliest of positions in Leinster House. The yeah. absolute lowliest. Leinster House is a good microcosm of how screwed up the employment legislation is in this country, with some very high payers at the top. And at the bottom, there are people who are living below the poverty line who have no employment rights whatsoever. And yeah, we need to do something about it. And a big shout out to those who are helping those, Jed Nash, Alice Mary Higgins, John Brady. They've all done great work to try and help the people who are at the very bottom of the ladder in Leinster House.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the late nights, you know, moving to the convention centre, been in the convention centre until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and then the ushers have to be back in there, you know, at 7 or 8 o'clock the following morning. Like, it's not... there's so many rules been broken, and it's ridiculous that it's our national parliament and we're not setting proper standards. It's also a gendered issue as well for women in there who have childcare or caring responsibilities, you know, single mothers. And it's really, anyway.
Thanks, Fair. And absolutely, gender always comes into it all. Speaking of employment conditions and the government being a mess, we are about to come out of level 5 now on Tuesday. And we have news that Pennies are going to open 24 hours, which is just going to be an absolute disaster. And can people please treat Pennies staff really nicely? You don't need your fake tan at 3 in the morning. What do we think about the lockdown being lifted? Where are we going to go from here? I'm terrified that the numbers are just going to go straight back up. So I'm staying in my house as I finally am 8 months, 9 months, I don't know, post COVID, and I'm finally like lost the brain fog. So I'm like terrified of getting it again. So I'm staying put where I am.
Well, I think we were told that when we get to 100 or less that we would reopen. And of course, that was just thrown out. Same as every single plan they've ever had has been thrown out. They haven't stuck once to a plan they made. Not once have they stuck to it. We were told you couldn't skip levels to lock down, and now we're skipping levels to come. I mean, the hypocrisy is just all over the place. What are they doing? They're taking a calculated risk that NPHET is wrong. They've been sidelining NPHET for ages, and now they're bringing in Ernest and Young. No, seriously, that's what they've brought in to decide. And since when has that kind of business ever helped the little people? Ever.
They were very good. They were, Ernest and Young audited Anglo-Irish before the crash, so they were very good.
My point is completely proven. You're heading into a second lock or into a third lockdown. Why are we doing it? For the sake of a few bob in tills. And is it worth it? No, it's certainly not. I feel sorry for those in hospitals, the staff, the frontline staff, who are going to have no Christmas. And I feel really sorry for them. And I feel sorry for the staff who have to work in places. I think you're just not being thought about at all. And remember it when it comes to voting.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, I don't know, all of the priority in Ireland in the last 2 weeks seemed to be about really the pubs opening up again. And like, I don't know, for me, it's just about family. Like, and I don't see how it works to do the two things at the same time, to open so much, so many businesses, and to allow 3 households to gather over this 2-week period. It just, it's really scary. And it's like,
well, the only thing they've taken out of the nativity is gold. That's the only thing they've taken out. They want to carry the gold. That's all there is. Everything else about Christmas means nothing to them. Nothing.
Okay. Let's just talk about the power of lobbying. They've done a good job in terms of IBEC and the Vintners Association, the financial institutions, all of these places. They've done a good job on actually reversing government tactic. I've seen a point made by, actually there are medical professionals in the audience, so I can't speak for them, but I do think we need to understand that. You know, they're looking at it. And I saw someone say during the week, I think it was Anthony O'Connor, the consultant, said that if he was in NFET, he'd want people back at the front line, because if you're not going to be listened to, you might as well be putting the work in where it's going to be needed. And they're talking about rolling up their sleeves already now for January. It's very concerning that they've changed the language already. What was it, Martin? A short, sharp.
Crap.
Let's not call it a lockdown tree. Let's call it a short, sharp adjustment. This is why these people are paid, why they have six or seven assistants to come up with the language to hide that they're already planning for the next lockdown. And the problem is the restaurants and bars and all that will open, they're not going to benefit greatly from opening at this limited capacity anyway. And, you would hope that more people would say, yeah, look, it's not worth the risk anyway. I mean, it's so arbitrary, six people from three households,
I saw somebody online saying, it was a journalist saying he'd been invited this week to three different Christmas parties. Hmm. Like, there are those who will do nothing and there are those who are going to exploit this situation to the maximum. And it leaves everyone else in a really precarious position because the virus, doesn't spread like that. And
well, when you compare us to Germany, who've said now that they could be locked down until early spring, there's adults in government over there. And it's also that we have our government, whether they like to admit it or not, terribly precarious, and they're afraid to go up against business interests. They're in a very precarious position. So they don't have... They don't have either the guts or the political acumen to stand up and say, no, this is the right thing to do, so we'll just stick with it.
But then what they do is say, let's introduce on-the-spot fines, which sounds like something that's a great response, but it's a dreadful response. It doesn't work. It is classist. And, the guards have said it completely doesn't work with their mechanism, their approach to all of lockdown and everything they've been trying to do. And it's going to take time for them to come on board. But the government get to say, oh, well, we've done something. We introduced fines.
I think just on closing up that second there, if we can just remember that this is airborne and the washing your hands is not going to save you, so going out to a restaurant, you can wash your hands all you want. You're breathing in that air that people are, you're sitting in a little fog. If you remember the old smoking ads, if you can actually see this, you're just sitting there breathing it in. So washing your hands is not going to save you. We might move on to our little final segment there because we're coming up to time. The one time of the year that everyone stops watching Pornhub is the Late Late Toy Show in Ireland. And I'm not even messing about that. Year on year, everyone switches off porn and watches toys. What were our thoughts on how it went this year? And Martin, did you stop watching porn for it?
Martin, you can go first.
I didn't watch it. I've nobody in the house who's been of an age for a decade or more, so I didn't watch it. And, I'm not terribly interested in it, to be quite honest with you. I think it's twee. I think, okay, I can see that it has highlighted a few issues, but, it's not going to change anything.
All right, still right, Grouch, get out of the way. Bye, humbug. Vicky.
I watched it, and I have to say the current host is not one of my favourite presenters, play it mildly. But I did watch it, and I loved it, and I got completely swept up in it, and I thought... They clearly have put so much effort into bringing a bit of joy this year. And I thought the fact that they didn't even name a single toy, I don't think, because it wasn't about that. And it was just about happiness and joy and kids. And I know people are saying it was sob story after sob story, but it wasn't. Like that kid that got to play with Dermot Kennedy. I mean, that's kind of awesome. So I thought it was really lovely. I really enjoyed it. Gave me a buzz.
I didn't watch it. I watched Dua Lipa live in concert on my couch. So that was way more fun.
I have a split split personality on this. I watched it and I cried my eyes out at lots of different parts. And then I kind of had that awful, it was the nation's problematic fave. Like, I'm literally watching it going, okay, all of these things, this young woman who was campaigning to get money for a prosthetic leg, why doesn't the state do that? And I, to the point where I was actually looking at, when it opened, oh my God, it's Roald Dahl. Don't they know he was a mad anti-Semite in my head? So I had written the tweet to say, Roald Dahl is an anti-Semite. And I went, don't send it, Tony. Jesus, don't send it. It'd take all the good out of it. But
just
it was,
take a day off.
Yeah, just take a day off being that dickhead. And I did take a day off being that dickhead.
It does evoke strong feelings, because I see Simon McGarr there in comments is saying he will fight me in support of the Late Late Show. Yeah. So it does invoke strong feelings for people. It certainly does.
Absolutely. Yeah. Enough to get them to stop watching Pornhub for one night anyway. So here we go. All right, we're going to finish there on our heroes of the week. Who have we got this week?
Someone else kick off, go on.
Okay, well, I'm going with Joanna O'Hara, who did the podcast with me the other week about her son, Niall, and the support she's received in response has been incredible. But she has, like, I've witnessed this transformation in this woman. She wrote to the Garda Commissioner on Thursday. She's done a really lengthy interview with Mick Clifford. She is just, oh, the bravery. And she's stepping up and she's just trying to achieve something in memory of her son so that his death isn't entirely meaningless. And it's been an utter joy to watch and give some sort of help in relation to that. But it's just been amazing to watch her. And I hope she continues to get the support she has been.
I'm going to go with Bear Grogan, because she made the doll interesting. And she did. And I'm going to go with Bear Grogan. She is modernizing it. She is bringing it to a level where younger people can be more interested. I know Coolio's a bit out of date, but, you know, expect us to get up to Eminem pretty soon, you know.
I think we're getting there.
Yeah, timeless.
But we're getting there. And I nominate Bear. I think Bear's doing great work. Well done, Bear.
Caroline.
I'm going to go for Robbie Lawler, a HIV activist, because it's World AIDS Day on Tuesday. And Robbie has been absolutely an incredible force in Ireland in fighting for access to medication, but also sharing his story and smashing stigma. And he was on The Late Late Show a few years back with Ryan Doherty, and that was an interesting experience. So he's going to be on my podcast tomorrow talking
he's
about
a gem.
He's absolutely gem, and he's just so lovely and humble. He'd probably die of embarrassment of me saying this, but he's just an incredible force.
Just Oisin has put up that a shout out for Monica Lennon, free period products bill through Scottish Parliament this week, so well worth mentioning. And I actually going to be really cheesy and actually push it back on you, Caroline, and say that that mention in Blind Boy's podcast was fantastic today. And the idea that he said that people go back and listen to your podcast and have men listen to women as opposed to, you know, did you hear what Blind Boy said? As opposed, and you've been saying it for years. I thought that was an important message. So shout out to him.
The Blind Boy is your hero.
No. Caroline's my hero. Blind Boy's getting a pat on the back for sending the ladder back down. He really is, and he deserves. Well, this time last year, myself and Martin and Rory were going on stage with him. So, you know, he sent the ladder back down, and that's always something that I want to acknowledge. That's nice.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely thing. And yeah, and made me number one in Algeria for the past couple of days, which is random. So across the world as well. But I like the Algerian thing. We're planning a road trip via Amsterdam, if anyone was listening in last week. So that's where we're going. I am going to wrap it up there. I'm going to abuse my hosting privileges today and spread a little of adult joy in the world. So if we're talking about toy shows, I'm giving away a womanizer sex toy over in Glow West. And treat yourselves, go and enter, because life is short. We're going to be in a lockdown. Why not have some more orgasms? And this is a really cool toy that's worth like €90. So go over to Glow West Podcast on Instagram. Comment the face you make when you have an orgasm. Tony's absolutely dying in the corner. And win yourself an amazing sex toy.
And it's open to the guys too, to get as presents for the women in their lives. So,
Your woman would be very, very, very happy. Your clitoris owner. Brilliant. That is us for today. We are going to stick around and have some Q&As with our Patreons afterwards. If you want to join us again next week, please do. It gets pretty juicy. Again, no pun intended. So head over to Patreon. That's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and you can join in and you'll be supporting the great work that we're doing and give us all a bit of Christmas cheer at the same time that people are supporting us. So thanks, Mel, and we'll see you next Sunday.